Shall I begin? All right, and you can just give me the hit when stop talking, woman. All right. So welcome. This is a no-brainer, relaxing, laughing. You can ask questions at any point. I had to look to her to see exactly what I'm supposed to be talking about because I kind of went rogue there. But I figure if you are growing herbs, you better know how to use them. I mean, you could just look at them, but we're going to talk about using them too. However, at any point, you can raise your hand and have a question, or if you have a certain experience, or if you're just going to be ornery and say, well, that's not the way I do it, then just there you go. All right. No, that's all right. But the first thing in herbs is there are rules to herbs, and then you immediately break them. So anyways, because they don't know. They don't read the books. So I have a handout, and I am going to follow that roughly. Just to keep me on track so you're not here for 2 hours. When I got here, I said, how long am I supposed to talk? And he said, well, if you go 74 minutes, the tape will cut you off. So if anybody needs to go at any point, you can. But my name is Karen, and we literally have an herb farm as the crow flies. I lost my directions, but south of here.
That way.
That, south of here. I'm not drunk, really. All right. It's only 3 miles, but I don't know how I got here. This is just our reference guide that we put out. It's yours to take if you would like it. If you have a neighbor that's interested, go ahead and snitch one from there too. You're welcome to take them home with you. The first part is all about herbs, so you don't have to remember everything I say, and you don't have to know if it's a hardy herb or if it's a tender herb. It's all in here, and there's recipes. And then in the back, we also do miniature perennials. Miniature perennials are not genetically modified. They are things where somebody's walking in nature and they see this whole grove of elm trees, and all of a sudden they see this little one right in front, and it's the same age. And so you take that and you propagate it, you make more, and if it continues to stay small, you got a miniature perennial. So we grow hosta that are this little. We grow forsythia that's this tall that blooms, little yellow forsythia. And we do that. Yes, you can do fairy gardens with that. That's something that you can get the next generation. It's like dollhouse gardening. You can get the next generation involved. But people have outdoor railroad gardens, and they need to landscape them, so they have little trees and bushes. And so anyways, that's a whole nother thing. And my husband and I, we've been married for 28 years. I told the staff that we live, work, breathe, pray together 24 hours a day, which is why I'm delighted to be here. But we get along. We still get along. I have two sons. One of them's on page 32, and that was taken about how many years ago? He's now 22. So that was on our first cover. His name's Ben. He goes to Kent State, so he's in your area, and he's studying business. And my other son is Josh, and he's 18, and he's in back. So the idea was to start a business in our backyard so that we could raise the family right there. So anyways, and we did it, and they still like us, and we still like them. So anyway, so that's a little bit about us. So other introductory things, we are open to the public. So like I say, we're not that far away. And we also have product in a few other places in northern Ohio. Not in anywhere where you guys are at, but kind of northeast Ohio. We have festivals because we like to have a little bit of fun and have different reasons to celebrate herbs and how you use them. So we have a Fairy Fest, which is miniature gardens. We have a June Herb Fair. We have a fall garlic festival, but it's going to turn into more of a harvest festival. You know, learning how to make cheese again and all those old crafts and a way of life that people don't do that much anymore. So we focus on that. And then we have a Christmas open house, which is coming up. So, and eventually we're going to turn our barn into kind of a gathering place, we hope. Maybe a little winery in a little cafe. But anyways, so that's Mulberry Creek Herb Farm. So, little bit about growing with herbs. And I'm going to say these things. This is not a test, but this is just to kind of get you guys on the same page. Some of you guys may already know. How many of you have gardened 5 years? 10 years, 15 years. Okay, let's trade places. Anyways, I just want to get you guys on the same page so you know what I'm talking about. And it's important when you are growing herbs to know what their life cycle is. If you can bring them indoors, if you should bring them, because guess what? There are many herbs, many perennials, that you can bring indoors and kill them. Yep. So don't think you're helping them out in the wintertime if you say, but I love that sage so much, keep the sage outdoors. So that's why I'm going to tell you about them. So the first thing is an annual. Anybody want to say what an annual? How long would an annual live?
1 year.
1 year, maybe. Maybe 1 year. So people love their basil, and they love to try to bring that thing in the fall. And you know what? It's got like a 10-month time clock, and that's it. You bring that thing in, and it attracts every aphid within the neighborhood. I mean, it just is vulnerable. And it will die, probably, most likely. Now, there's ways to get around it. There's actually other basil varieties that are tender perennial basil varieties. And they do last year after year. Okay, we'll get into that in a second. And the other way to get around it is I seed this basil in August. Okay, so now we've got 10 months or 12 months in front of that. So that's the other way to get around it. So annuals are 1 year, maybe, usually 10 months. And name off annual herbs. Some annual herbs.
Basil, of course.
Basil.
Dill.
That's a self-seeder. They'll say, well, wait a second, that's not an annual. It comes back every year. That's a good one. But dill and some other ones self-seed. So the plant doesn't come back, but it makes a flower, it makes a seed, it drops the seed, and the seed comes back and sends it over there. Yes. Fennel is a funny one. There are three different kinds of fennels. Okay, so there's a bulbing fennel, and that lasts 1 year. Well, you know, you harvest it, and you've harvested the whole thing. There's a green fennel that's, why? You know, why do it? It doesn't produce a bulb, and there's nothing that you've done wrong. It's just that the business you bought it from was being cheap, because bulb fennel seed's a lot more expensive than green fennel seed. All right, I think bulb fennel is far superior, but it's like 5 times more expensive. And then there's bronze fennel,
which comes up everywhere.
It is a hardy perennial, so it does come up from the rootstock, but it also self-seeds all over the place. Good thing there's nobody here, because I'd wipe them out with my hands. All right. So annuals live about 1 year. Tender perennials would live year in and year out in northern Ohio if we had reasonable winters. We do not have reasonable winters. Nobody in here can keep their rosemary going reliably. It's not your fault. There are some pockets in Vermilion for some reason that they can grow rosemary year after year, but you cannot rely on those. They're just going to die. And those are the ones that you bring indoors. That's the category. Because annuals, they're already going to not last long. Hardies, you don't bring them. These are the ones you bring indoors. Now, there's some exceptions that you can kind of get away with for a little while, but it will catch up to them. So, things like bay laurel, and I will pass these around in a little bit. Bay laurel is a tender perennial. This one's called Mexican tarragon. Common names can be bad and confusing. It is not a tarragon. It tastes like a tarragon, but it's actually related to a marigold. And I knew that before I even got the plant, because the botanical name was Tagetes lucida, and I know Tagetes is a marigold. So common names are kind of useful, but not always. And scientific names are always useful, but they're ridiculously long sometimes. But you sound smart saying them, Tagetes lucida. So there you go. So anyways, that's a tender perennial. No more tender perennials up here. Yes. Well, those are, but they're not.
Question.
So
French tarragon a tender, or is it?
French tarragon is a hardy perennial.
Okay.
If you do it correctly, and that's one of the tricky ones. All right, so tender perennials are the ones you need to bring indoors to keep them going. So other ones that I don't have here are Senna geraniums. They smell wonderful. They're native to South Africa, so you can see why they wouldn't survive here. Some sages. some oreganos. I know those are usually hardy, but so you have to find out from your nursery to be sure, is this sage a hardy perennial to Elyria, Ohio, or Wilmington, Ohio? Although she can grow a few more things than we can grow, because you're actually right along the lake, right where I am, we're supposed to be zone 6, which is slightly warmer than the middle of the state, and then Wilmington's zone 6 again. So we're warm, a little bit colder, and warm again. But you guys can still grow things that we can't grow. Yes? They've changed the zones, period. Okay. They keep changing them.
Oh, okay.
Yep. Yes. Are you from?
That area.
All right. Yeah, they keep changing them.
Yeah.
I don't know specifically if they have there, but I know ours has changed. Yeah. We are supposed to be warmer now.
I'm south of there, but not very far south. And I noticed from some publications, I'm like, wait.
Yep.
I've always been blah, blah, blah.
Yep. Yep. That, well, that's changing a little bit.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thyme
is usually a hardy perennial.
You can leave it outside?
You have to leave it outside. Here is the reason why. It is hardy. It is meant to last outside. When you bring it indoors, excuse me, I'll start over. Outside in the wintertime, it gives it a rest. That's why I like living in Ohio, because I don't work like a maniac in the wintertime. I still work quite a bit, but it gives me a rest. It gives thyme a rest. It gives sage. What are some other hardy ones? A lot of the oreganos. Not, like I say, not all of them, but it gives it a rest.
Even
so if it's in a pot, you definitely need to either have a thick pot or sink it in the ground. Because in a pot, even if it's hardy, there's too much exposure, you know, to temperature and wind. Wind is a killer. And she was talking about French tarragon. I was going to come back to that. All herbs like to be well-drained. We'll talk about that more in a second. But lavender and French tarragon in particular, if they are not planted in a soil that drains quick enough, you will kill it. Not because of the temperature, because they don't want their roots marinating in water for any length of time. But in particular, they don't do as well. That's easy to grow, but you have to bring it indoors, that Mexican tarragon. The French stays, but it's picky.
The good one. That's where it is.
Yep. Yep.
Because I thought it was dead, and I went out and bought another one, and it was like, oh, great. Now I have a mountain.
Well, yeah, and tarragon's tricky, too, because you can get something called Russian tarragon, and it's neither Russian in its native habitat, neither, or is it tarragon. And it doesn't taste like either one. It's very pretty, but you don't eat it. So Russian tarragon, that's a whole nother. Well, they call it both, which is another, yep, it's Peruscava atrofolia or something like that. Anyways, it's pretty, but it's not good for eating. So, all right, so annual, tender perennial, hardy perennial. I missed one. Which one did I miss? Biennial. Not too many herbs are biennials. But it's good to know that it's a biennial, so you know you're not doing something wrong. Most of the time, people have trouble with herbs. It's not their own fault. It's in the life cycle. So they say, you know, I grew parsley last year, and it was beautiful. It came up. It had lots of foliage. It was wonderful. This year, it came up. It was good. And all of a sudden, the foliage turned different. It got more coarse. It wasn't as fine, and the flavor was awful. And then it sent up a root, a flower stalk.
Mm-hmm.
That's a biennial. 2 years. Its life cycle is 2 years. So the first year it's all foliage, the second year it's foliage, and then it's a flower and it's a seed. Sometimes biennials live a third year. Again, herbs don't follow the book always. Sometimes, like Amsterdam celery, it's a wonderful celery. Celery is hard to grow, but you can grow this thing called Amsterdam celery, and it just grows that heart, that leafy part of celery that's so good. But that is supposed to be biennial, but it'll come up 3 years in a row. Yes.
So it's a biennial. Is it like the first year is the best?
Yes. Yeah. Oh, absolutely. Bar none. The second year you got to get in there quickly, or you know, by June it's bad. So here's how you turn a biennial plant into a hardy perennial. You plant parsley 1 year, and then you plant another one the next year. So this one seeds and comes up eventually that third year. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So year number one is a plant for year number three, a brand new plant. Because year number one, it's all foliage. Year number two goes up for a seed. Year number three, that seed has become a fresh plant. So if you do it 2 years in a row, you will always have parsley. Caraway is another one. Does that make sense?
Yep.
You're looking at me.
No, no.
Okay. It's hard for me to explain, but yes, if you just know that if you buy them 2 years in a row or get them, whatever, seed them 2 years in a row, you will always have it. One plant 1 year, another plant the next year.
Cilantro
is another, like, why can't I grow those?
Is it by?
No, it's an annual. So cilantro, people love cilantro. I bet you know by now that some people love the flavor of cilantro and some people can't stand. Smells like dirty socks. Smells like belly button lint. Bad. It is genetic.
Yes.
It is genetic. You've got a gene that makes it smell like dirty socks. It makes it taste like you've had coins in your hand all day. Luckily, I don't have that. I love cilantro. So that's another booker butt. It's an annual. It's like lettuce. As soon as it starts getting warm, it bolts. It flowers. When you say bolt, it means it flowers. It sets seeds. Don't get too excited about that. Let it set seed. Let the seed drop. Water the seed in till it comes up again. It'll keep doing this. And then if you get it just right, you know, you might have seeded it or planted it in May, and then you get a second crop in June, and then you get a third crop in August. That's beautiful, because by September, it starts getting used to the cold temperatures. In December, I've brushed off snow off of cilantro that is perfectly green because it got used to it. If you would have taken that plant that was grown in a greenhouse and put it outside, you would have killed it. But it got used to the temperature. Yeah. So don't get too flustered about your cilantro. Just keep it going. And you can use the seeds. Okay, here's the bonus point. What is the seed of cilantro called? It's an herb and a spice, which I didn't even talk about what an herb is versus a spice. It's coriander. Yep, it's coriander. It's those little balls, and it doesn't taste, it doesn't have that tang of the fresh cilantro, but you grind it up, and it's like orangey, citrusy, roasty, and wonderful. So you can use that too. So what is the difference between an herb and a spice? It means nothing. This other information is helpful, but this information is not helpful. What's the difference between an herb and a spice? Kind of, but I cook with herbs all the time. Yeah. Am I losing this?
I don't think it's working.
Am I still on? I'm still on. It's not a microphone, it's a recorder, so you can hear my pleasant voice again as a recording. That's kind of it. It's the parts that you use of the plant that makes it an herb or a spice. Again, who cares, but the definition is an herb is using the leaves. Anything else is a spice. So a flower of an herb is technically a spice. Definitely a seed is a spice. Definitely the root is a spice. Who cares? It doesn't make any difference, but that's the difference. All right, so growing them. This is all the textbook stuff, and then the backside's the fun stuff. They are, don't cheat. Don't look at the backside. They are, whoopsie. Oops, I really did it. I think I lost my tape. There it is. I need my personal secretary again. All right, there we go. Technical difficulties. So they must be grown, if you're growing them outside, they must be in a raised, I feel like this is in the wrong place. They must be in a raised bed, or they like to be in a raised bed. A raised bed just means that it's, you know, if you can get that garden piece, that garden bed, like 4 inches taller than the grass or whatever around it, that's lovely. That helps, you know. if you can't do that and you just have a garden and you want to put it in a garden, maybe test it out first. Very easy to test. Take a shovel or something, whatever, dig a hole, put a bucket full of water. It should drain. No, it shouldn't take longer than 10 minutes to drain. If you come back in an hour and it's still sitting there, that's good for mushrooms and cranberries. It is not good for herbs. So it needs to, the water needs to drain away. Now, it's not good to have sand, because then it really drains away and you don't have anything. But, you know, you want it to drain, you know, in 10 minutes or less. More like 5 minutes, but yeah. All right, you're good. All right, other things about herbs. Part of the way that you learn how a plant does well is that you look to its native habitat. And the herbs that we grow are culinary herbs, cooking herbs, and they, most of them are native to like France, the Mediterranean region. They're the Mediterranean herbs. So think about those conditions. You know, the hills of France are these wonderful sloping, so there's your well draining, and just full sun. In France, it's very well draining, and you know, sometimes it's gravelly soil, so that's what they like. We don't grow the classic medicinal herbs like licorice, like black cohosh, things like that, because we're flat and we're sun, and that's not good for medicinal herbs. Medicinal herbs grow in southern Ohio, actually southeast Ohio in the Athens area is just a wonderful area for medicinal herbs, lots of woods. That's what the medicinal herbs. So we grow what we can grow, which are the cooking herbs. So when I say most herbs prefer 8 hours of sun, those are the cooking herbs. And you water them only when they are getting established, only when you're putting them in the ground. You know, maybe water them for every other day, the first couple of weeks. After that, they're on their own. These are drought-tolerant plants. They don't even want that extra water. If they happen to get an inch of water a week, they would like it, but they will survive with conditions less than that. So if you're growing them in containers, you will have to water them probably every day or every other day, just because, you know, you're at the mercy of that container. But if they're in the ground, we don't water them again, unless we really have super dry conditions. Any questions so far?
One more.
Yes, yes.
Sorrel, what is it?
Sorrel is a hardy. It grows anywhere. It grows in moist soil, it grows in dry soil. Yep. Yeah, I've been telling folks, the ones that came in recently, you can ask a question at any time. I can make up an answer at any time. All right. They attract few destructive insects when they're outdoors. When you bring them indoors, okay, that gets a little bit trickier. But they attract very few destructive insects. They attract a lot of good insects, the beneficial ones. How many people grow parsley and have seen those beautiful worms on their parsley, which are the caterpillars, which are the monarch butterflies? So don't take off the caterpillars on your dill or your caraway or your parsley. Yeah.
Also, I planted the fennel, the parsley, yeah, the cilantro, and the dill together by mistake, and they were eaten by the swallowtails.
Yes, yes. That was a smorgasbord for them.
It sure was.
Yes, yes. Now, dill and fennel, when it's planted by each other and they mix, because they do, the seed that comes up, the plant is not good. I call it fill or dental. It's fennel and dill. It's not good. They are very close in their botanical nature, so they will cross even though they're different herbs. So yeah, the butterflies like it,
yeah,
but
they do.
Yeah. All right. And when you prune them, when you give them a haircut, it's after they flower. The worst time of year, just remember this part, the worst time of year to give your plants a trim is right now. Absolutely the worst time of year. October, November, don't do it. Because when you give a plant a haircut, every time you prune it, you take something off. Let me give you a bigger one. If I take it, and when I prune, I don't just do a, I go down to where the stem, side stem meets the main stem. I'll go down to there, you know, and I'll take it off like that. Whoops. And right there are new buds for the new plants that are going to come out. And when you trim them, that stimulates them to grow. You don't want to stimulate them in October or November, because that new fresh growth will get frosted, will get frozen, and it'll take the whole plant down. We have killed an entire hedge of lavender because we thought, oh, the first year we thought, oh, let's trim it up now for the fall. Don't do it. Leave. Another reason is leave the foliage on, because it's like a hat. It's your winter hat for the herbs. So your mom always said to put your hat on before you went outside. Leave the foliage on. So,
when do you trim them then?
After they flower, or any time in the summertime, because you're trimming them to harvest to eat. So any time in the summertime. So basically, for herbs, it's free game anywhere from May to the very beginning of September. Like lavender, you want to make sure that you don't trim until after it blooms, or else you will clip it off. So lavender is like the end of June or the end of July. But other than that, most of the time you can trim the herbs at any time when they're growing strong. So now, growing them indoors, which I should talk about since that is the title of this class. So we will go to that part right now since we're talking about it. So what I will tell you is, for growing them indoors, what's important is that you pick the right herbs, the ones that are the tender perennials. Now, I will say that you can get away with chives, which is a hardy perennial. You can get away with them 1 year. If you keep doing it, it will finally say, forget it, I need a rest. So you can get away with chives for 1 year. You can do parsley. You can do basil, planted late, planted late in the year. You can do bay, that's a tender perennial. You can do rosemary. So anything on the tender perennial list, plus you can circle basil. Dill is too tall, so forget it. Marjoram, you can circle that one. That's a good one for indoors. Like I said, chives, you can do once. Are you seeing under, I'm just looking under the life cycles. Sage, you can get away with 1 year. It would rather not. Mm-hmm. You can get away with it a little bit. None of these will thrive. Okay, none of them will thrive. When you see those pictures in the magazines on the beautiful windowsill and it's bright and shiny, they just planted that sucker. That was not there for 2 months. So speaking of which, so what do you need indoors? Besides good plants, you need good well-draining soil, any good potting soil, nothing special as long as it drains. 6 inches minimum. Now, they're not growing like crazy. Normally when you have them growing outside, you have to have 12 inches minimum, but they're growing quite a bit. So always remember, if they're growing this tall up here, they need this much height. But in the wintertime, they're just kind of surviving. You're lucky to have a few sprigs. I got to tell you, you're not going to get a huge production out of it. Not indoors, not in the wintertime. So at least 12 inches deep. You can have something like this, by this, you can put 3 plants in there. You could put a chive in there that doesn't take up much space. You can put a basil in there. You can put a parsley in there. So pick the right plants, first of all. And the best ones by far are the tender perennials. I'll say that again. Then when it's indoors, the brightest window you have, these are still growing. Don't put them out in your garage and think that you don't have to water them and they are still growing. So brightest window you have. This is not very bright here. Even if this was the south, and which way's the lake? Where's the lake? The lake's that way. Oh, this is a north window. We don't want this at all. So this is a double whammy. This is a north window and it's got an overhang. Not a good window. You want a south window. You want a west window. Maybe east with supplemental, and definitely not north. North is the worst. It just doesn't provide that much sun, not for very long. So bright light, and supplement it if you happen to have, a little fluorescent. That doesn't hurt either, a fluorescent lamp. You keep them drier. You water them, water till they just start to seep out. You might take them, put them in your sink, water them, let them just, because you don't want to put them in a saucer. When you water them, if you do have a saucer, then you want to dump it out. So water them till it just starts to seep out. then eventually put it back on the windowsill and wait till it's dry again, till you can put your finger down that far and it's dry. And it looks kind of grayer on top. That is the key. I would say 95% of the people overwater their herbs, and that's how they kill them. And then they start looking bad, so they water them more. Yeah, so keep them dry. Now, this is the toughest part, because we've got sun. Okay, that could be doable. We've got dry. Well, that's your own thing that you can do. The third thing is they would love to be 55 degrees. That's kind of a hard one to do. Get as close to 55 as you can. The exception is basil. It likes the heat. So if you have trouble and you have a warm home, grow basil. It likes it a little bit warmer. But, you know, if you can get it closer to 65 rather than 75, 75 is a killer. It's just too hard on them. They don't want to be in those conditions. So if you can do that, full sun, dry side, cool, you can keep them going all winter. Any questions on that part? That was the whole talk right there, see? All right.
How low can the temperature be?
40, except for basil. The hardy perennials would like 40. Some of the annuals would not like it so much. Yeah, as long as there's light. Perfect. Wonderful. You might be able to actually have herbs that thrive. Yeah. And here's another kicker. If you have a hardy perennial, and every once in a while in January it might get 55 in the afternoon, take it outside for the afternoon. Remember to bring it back in at night. But it will love that. It will love that. They will get critters sometimes inside. They're living under less than good conditions. Your best defense, thank you, against flying insects is your vacuum. Just vacuum those suckers. You see them? Just vacuum them. Keep it there. Next day, vacuum it again. Third day, vacuum, because you might have different life cycles. You might have the flying, you might have the larva, you might have the pupa. So over the week, you might get all of the sizes of those insects. They're gone. That's it. Now, if you have ones that suck, the aphids, those are a little bit trickier. You need like insecticidal soap or neem, or a breath of fresh air outdoors on a warm day, if it so happens. All right, so the last thing before we go to the fun side and we start sniffing some of these herbs is harvest. This kind of relates more to the outdoors, because quite frankly, you're gonna have a lot more to harvest when you're growing them outdoors. So just the rule of thumb is that the energy in the plant moves. In the beginning, it's in the leaves, and the leaves look good, and they look shiny, or they look green, or they look real vibrant. That's when you pick the leaves. Then the energy literally starts moving to the flowers. So at that point, once it gets to the flowers and the flowers are starting to fully open, you know, that's kind of too late for the, it's not really too late, but your flavor isn't at an optimum. So you pick the leaves when they are, before they're flowering, you pick the flowers before they fully blast open, you pick the seeds, this is where nature tells you a lot of things, you pick the seed when the seed starts to drop, or sometimes they change colors, that's when you pick them, and the roots you pick when they partially on top start to go bad. Like garlic, we're gonna talk about garlic. I'm gonna give you two things that you can put in your kitchen that will help your health, and garlic's one of them. With garlic, you wait until the bottom three or four leaves get brown. You don't wait till the whole plant gets dead, and then it'll start to actually eat up itself, and you won't have as much of a bulb. So anyways, that's just real quick stuff. And you can preserve it in many ways, but we're not gonna get into that unless anybody has questions about preserving. Yes. Yes. You can eat them.
Oh, okay.
Any plant, I have not come across an herb that if I eat the leaves, I can't eat the flowers.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really good to pick the flowers. It's better for the plant. Some plants like lime basil will die because they flower too much. They'll literally just die. But yeah, eat them.
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah. Good question. All right. Backside. What do you do with these guys? Does anybody have any other questions on planting or anything else? All right. All right, here's some things. I'm just going to dabble a little bit with cooking and a little bit with crafting and a little bit with decorating with herbs and a little bit with healing, too. So the first thing is, yes, toss out your prehistoric jars of dried herbs. Do yourself a favor. Bay should not be eaten when it's 25 years old. Neither should dried thyme or sage. Reward yourself. Fresh is so much better. That was the number one question I got when I used to do the farmer's market was, so when I get this, you know, how do I dry it? Don't eat it fresh. It's so much better. And I will, if anybody's tired after a long, this will wake up. We're going to start sniffing. So this is bay leaf. This is so much better. And I'm rubbing it because, of course, there's a whole bunch of bubbles that have essential oils, and I'm breaking those bubbles. It's okay. They got plenty of bubbles. So pass that around. You smell cinnamon. You taste cinnamon when you use bay leaf fresh. I've seen these suckers, you know, so old you need a dating machine, a carbon dating machine to figure out how old they are. Get some fresh. Use them fresh. So that's my first plea to you, is try things fresh. How do you start? How many of you already cook with herbs? With fresh herbs? Yeah? Yeah. All right. You're already doing it. All right. All right. I mean, dried herbs, I use dried herbs too. Sometimes, you know, you are tired. It's the end of the day. You want to eat in 10 minutes. You're getting hungry. I do not want to go back outside and cut something. I'm just going to go to this little jar that I have of Italian seasonings, and I'm going to put it on there. That's okay. But if you can and you've got the energy and you've planned ahead, use the fresh ones. So to start with, if you haven't been using fresh herbs and you have a family who you think might not want to see those little green flicks or little purple flowers, then hide them at first. It's okay. God, it's okay. It worked good with God, even if you hide them at first. So what I will do is, they actually call it bouquet garni, where you take chives, and you take parsley, and you take tarragon, and you might a bay leaf, and you might bundle it up in a leek leaf and tie that up and throw that in your simmering, bubbling stew. So start by, you know, putting the whole thing in, and then you'll take it out before they even know it was in there. So here's the other one that I do. This is using flowers. I swear I eat pretty healthy, but whenever I do a talk, I always mention things that are not that healthy for you. So here's the first not healthy recipe that I make once a year. Everything in moderation, right? So it is called a raspberry white chocolate lavender cheesecake. And here's how you start it.
The samples?
I know. Once a year, and it's in June for our anniversary. Yep, once a year. And that's when the lavender is on. Okay, so you start by taking, you make the crust with pecan sandies. Don't get the generic crap. Get pecan sandies. Crush them up. Add butter to it, because, of course, that's not high enough calories enough. And so you make your crust. And then you take red raspberries, which are on then too. So this is a June one. You grab those and you sprinkle those over your crust, and you put that in the freezer. And then you take white chocolate and you break it up and you put it in a bowl. Then you have some heavy cream, because again, we don't have enough calories as it is. And you put that on your stovetop and you get it just to almost before it's gonna boil. And then you grab a muslin bag that has lavender flowers in it, and you throw it in there. And then you take it off the heat, and you have it covered. And so it kind of oozes. It is a little bit purple, but it doesn't purple the at all. All right. So it oozes out. And then you still want it warm, because you strain that over the white chocolate. So you're making a ganache. Are you hungry at this point? So you're making a ganache, and then you add cheesecake to it, blah, 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 a little bit of sugar or honey if you want, and you put that on your crust and you bake it. So yes, a lavender white chocolate raspberry cheesecake. So that's how you hide it. That's how you hide it. Or if you're making brownies and somehow it asks for a liquid, you can throw the mint in there and then put it into your put that liquid, strain it into your brownies, and continue working with that. Now, many, many years ago, when I was teaching a class, I was going to make mint brownies. I was in a hurry, and I thought, you know, I don't need to wash the mint. You know, we grow things organically. You know, he hasn't put anything. he put seaweed on it as a fertilizer, which I found out after I made the brownies. So still wash your herbs. That's always a good idea. All right. So that's how you hide them at first. But then if you're bold enough or whatever, just to give you an idea, I generally say when you're cooking with fresh herbs, chop them up, use about a teaspoon of fresh to 4 servings. Now for me, as I eat more and more herbs, I tend to need a little bit more than that, but that's a good starter, kind of a good rule of thumb. And you really want to, for the most part, add those herbs towards the end of cooking. I think you've all heard that before. Maybe the last 5 minutes, maybe the last 10 minutes. There are some herbs that you can cook longer, some herbs you don't want to, you know, heat up at all. And yes, add the flowers. Definitely add the flowers. They're good. They're very volatile, so you do want to add those after you've taken them out of the oven or after you've taken off the stovetop. They're not a garnish. You eat them, but they don't really want to be cooked too much at all. They don't really want that much heat at all. So I'll add thyme flowers to a roasted potato salad. Just lovely, that, because thyme is like a pepper, like a, you know, salt and pepper. Basil, well, I'll talk about it in a second, what else I do with some other flowers. So I'll try to keep disciplined here. And all right, so the next one, now we're gonna start passing around some herbs because it's time to start smelling. This is the stinky part of the situation. So I have divided, and this is a theory that I came up with, which might not be unique at all, but I'm a scientist, so I'm always observing things. And this is the part that's really, really cool, that kind of says that there's a plan out there, and I'll tell you why in just a minute. So I have divided my herbs into what I call the white wine herbs, the lighter flavored herbs, the things that you would add to white wine. You know, when you think of white wine, you think of lighter foods, right, for the most part, or white wine vinegar. These go with the foods that would go with the lighter foods. On the other end of the spectrum are the really stinky ones, the really strong ones, the ones that if you paired them with a light food, they would just overpower it. And then there's the ones that are just the happy people, the peacemakers, that can kind of go in either direction. And I would call bay leaf being in the middle, something like that. So things like, and I'll start passing this around, this is a really light scented herb. This is pine. Trust me. Sometimes in the winter, they don't smell as good. Trust me, it smells more citrusy in the summertime. Sorry. I am not a good herb spokesman.
Don't inhale deeply, but it does smell good.
Yes. Yeah.
It gets stuck right here.
It does. So these are things that you can add in abundance. So more like a half cup to a cup. You can add a whole bunch of them. You can have fun with them. You tend to not make mistakes with it. And here is the cool part. So things like chervil, which tastes like tarragon, licorice, and dill, and cilantro, a lot of the vegetables that are on that thyme, like the spring lettuces and beets radishes, the herbs that are doing their best in the spring go with the vegetables that are coming on then. Now, is that cool or what? Is that cool or what? So that's why I think there's a plan. This is where you look at nature. I look at nature as to how to raise my kids. I mean, you just have to notice miracles and watch, you know, it's all, the plan is right out there. You just have to find it. But that's one of them that I just realized, oh my gosh, you know, the peas taste so good with chervil that time, and that's when the peas are on. I mean, it's not every case, but for the most part, these guys do well there. They should be used fresh. Okay, I'll pass around some more. They should be used fresh. Don't dry these. You know, dried parsley, you know what parsley smells like, but you know what? This is good for you. Just sink in some vitamin A and vitamin C. It's such a nutritious plant, which is great because you can use a lot of it. So anyways, don't dry parsley. Don't buy dried parsley. It could taste just as similar to dried grass, and I'm not exaggerating. It doesn't have the flavor. the oils just shoot out. All the good perfume, it's gone. There's just nothing left but the actual alfalfa-smelling plant. So it's not good. So, and here's the one that I was talking about, Mexican tarragon. I love this plant. Here's another one of the plant that's out there. The tender perennials seem to know that God gave them one season in Ohio to perform, and they do well. They grow like crazy. This one you should put right next to a water faucet because it grows so fast, not invasive, but fast, that it wants more water.
Can you grow that one easily
in the house? Yeah, you can. The only drawback is that it's big. But Mexican tarragon, you can grow that in the house. And what I would almost suggest, you know, by the end of the season, if you put that in the ground, you'd have a plant this big. I told you, it grows quite a bit. So take cuttings from it so that you bring in a small as opposed to a foot and a half tall plant. So, yeah, that's my... It will root in water, but don't go through that step. That's a real common question. Because when it roots in water, then it has to get... Then its roots have to get used to rooting in soil. So just put it in soil. So this is how you do it. It's pretty easy. I'll take this side shoot. So I would have a tray, and this is what we do this time of year because we grow 90% of what we sell. We're doing it right now, either by seeds or by cuttings or divisions. And so this is a cutting. So I took something this long, and I'll pull off the bottom, try not to rip the stem along with it. And those of you on my tape, you can't see what I'm doing, but I'm pulling leaves off of the stem.
Inch of leaves off.
Yep, or even more, because I don't really want those bottom leaves to be touching the soil. That's just a good place to rot. Put that in to the soil. Mist it daily. Make sure it doesn't dry out. Make sure it doesn't tucker out. And about, oh, smells good. Oh, my gosh. I get easily distracted. In about a week, it all of a sudden will be turgid all the time, and that's when you know it's taken root. So then you have this little one to take in the house as opposed to a giant. So here, I'll give this to you. This is your gift today. All right. Doesn't that smell good, though? For a moment, I thought it smelled like Pepsi, and that's terrible. But it does. I don't like Pepsi, but it smells good. See, we're sharing. That's good. All right. Sure, absolutely. That's that tarragon. Yeah, I know. But it gets little yellow flowers that look like single gem marigolds. Not the big frilly ones, but the single petal. Say that again? Anything, light things. Here's where it doesn't fall. Your potatoes come on in the fall, but these go really good with potatoes. With green beans, anything fresh salads, and anything that's not, any fish. Any fish. Oh, salmon, definitely. Anything that's, you know, you don't want a big beef tenderloin or something that's going to, well, you could even get away with that, but come to think of it, never mind. Yeah, but lighter foods. Fluids too, but foods.
Pork.
You can get away with it. Yeah, you can get away with that. So like I say, there's general rules, but. Yes. Yes, it is. Yes, if you look up gem marigold in the catalog, you will see Tagetes as the first scientific name, and you will see Tagetes as the first scientific name. So I know that they are like sisters; they are closely related.
But this is the Mexican
tarragon, yes, which is not Mexican or tarragon. Why do these people come up with these names? They should call it Licorice Tower or something. All right, so that is, yeah, that just really makes a difference. I tell the kids, I get lots of kindergartners that come in and they ask the strangest questions, it's fun. And I tell them, think of the leaves, the bottom sides as like bubble wrap. So we're popping all those bubble wrap pockets of perfume, so. And of course they go crazy and then disassemble my plant, but I just have one plant for them to do it. All right, so then there's the peacemakers and they go in either direction. That's basil, and I kind of, what else do I have there? Yeah, chives, marjoram, lavender flowers. They can kind of go either way. They're still best fresh, but most of the time you can dry them. Chives isn't one of them that you should, but basil you can dry and lavender you can dry. So they kind of go both ways. You use kind of a half cup. You don't use usually a full cup. You can use more than, you know, a teaspoon or a tablespoon. So they're kind of in the middle. They're kind of happy. And they are best in the summertime, and they are good with anything that's summer. Any summer vegetable. You know, sweet corn, green beans, picnic food, picnic salads, potato salads. Anything that's summer, that's when they're on, and that's what they go best with. The most evil thing to do is to chop up herbs and put them in butter and add some garlic and add a little bit of salt and make an herb butter and put it on any vegetable that crosses your table. You will eat twice as much butter that week. But you know what? Butter is better than marjoram, and it's not that bad for you. So there you go. I'm just making sure I don't forget stuff. Anyways, and if you were, making vinegars, you would use the white wine vinegars. This you'd use the apple cider, maybe, vinegars. Or it could go either way. Because, again, these guys are peacemakers. And please, please, use white wine vinegar. Even if you don't care for wine, it's been distilled out and you don't get the white distilled. That is actually a petroleum product. That's good for cleaning. That's good for putting in your laundry. It is not good for eating. It's literally not good for eating. Yeah, so use the, it's a little bit more expensive, but use the white wine vinegar or rice wine vinegar or red wine. Yeah, yeah, not good for you. Yeah, all right. And then the last ones are, I think, what a lot of people think of, the herbs. These are the, you know, the big heavyweights. This is the time. Well, let's pass it around. And the reason why we have so many herbs, we have about 300 varieties, is because we have like 35 different varieties of thyme. This is, just smell it and tell me what kind of thyme that is. Yes, lemon thyme. Yes, lemon thyme. Yeah, yeah, yeah. That's wonderful. I wish it would, because eventually, it's called golden lemon thyme. This happens to, there's some thyme, lemon thyme that's just green, but this is called golden lemon, so it's got a variegation to it. Yes. Isn't that lovely? That is probably my second favorite herb right there, because you can use it on fish, and you can put it in cupcakes. Yes. Yes.
Is woolly thyme edible as well?
Woolly thyme I just don't mess with. It's good for in between stones, and it doesn't even grow that well.
No,
it's a little bit picky. Yeah. It almost likes a little bit of shade, which is unusual for thyme, and it doesn't want to dry out, which is unusual for thyme. Okay. Yeah, there are some, I have to watch how I say it, prostrate, not prostate. I said that to a man. I'm saying prostate. I said, creeping, doggone it. There are some creeping thymes that, yeah, you can eat them, but I don't need a pool boy. I need a prep chef, you know. I don't like to prep things. And creeping thyme, whoops, that was recorded, wasn't it? Creeping thymes are just not, they're a pain in the butt for prepping. So I like ones like that. You can just chop them, Yes. Lemon balm, yes. Lemon balm is related to mint, but you know what? Basil's related to mint. Thyme's related to mint. Oregano's related to mint. And you can impress your friends. You'll say, I know. I'm trying to find one that's easier to see. Oh, this is probably the easiest one. Oh, anyways, they're not being cooperative. You can tell something's in the mint family if they have a square stem. It's hard to tell on thyme because it's little, but it's literally a square stem. And that's most likely in the mint family. And all of those are in the mint family, so don't be scared by mint. Mint can be grown responsibly. You just have to keep it in a container. And you can sink the container in the ground, but you got to keep it in a container. Yes. And mints are wonderful. Yeah, lemon balm the same way. Yeah, it seems to be more closely related to a classical mint. But lemon balm, oh my gosh, if you look at all of the medicinal qualities, lemon balm has probably got the longest list of any herb. Yeah, it's the herb of joy, it's uplifting, it's always good for, people had problems with gas back then, because every herb is good for gas. But lemon balm was particularly good for gas. Well, they were eating bad foods, they were eating
spoiled meat,
yeah, exactly. All right. So these are the strong ones, and these are the ones, I still like them fresh first, but these are the ones that dry. Almost every single one you can dry. And what's cool about that is when you dry them, you're going into wintertime. And what foods are you eating in the wintertime? Steaks and squashes and breads and things that you cook longer, root vegetables, and all of these herbs do really well with those. So if you thought golden thyme was bad, smell this one. So this is a dwarf leaf sage, and this is a purple sage. Sage comes in all different shapes and colors, strong. And life cycles. These are the hardy ones, but there's a pineapple sage that gets tall and has these beautiful long spikes that are beautiful. I'm trying to think of the color, close to that color maybe. Gorgeous color. And they're tender perennial, but it's a sage. So here's my... I'm going to jump ahead slightly. My favorite sage recipe is very simple. Most of my favorite recipes are very simple. When I was, I lived out in the state of Washington for a few years. I was on my own and making my way in this world. And somebody said, you know, I wasn't making much money, so I wasn't eating meat. I was kind of an involuntary vegetarian just because that was more expensive, right? So I didn't have it that often. And somebody said, well, you should use sage because sage is the main ingredient that seasons sausage. So it kind of fakes that you got some sausage in there. And I thought, okay. And then I thought, well, gosh, if you can do sausage, I could make bacon bits out of those. And so I don't use those leaves. There's another sage that has broad, wonderful gray leaves that's much easier, once again, to prep. It's called Bear Garden. Not Beer Garden, Bear Garden. And so... You take a pan, a saute pan, put some olive oil in there, get it just a little bit sizzly, throw in the whole leaves, throw them in whole, you know, kind of shake it around. Maybe do it maybe like 30 seconds. You gotta try this. And you don't want it so hot that you don't want the oil smoking, of course. And try it at 30 seconds. Take it out, put it on a paper towel, and if you burn it, it smells like burnt hair. So you know, oops, I went too long there. If you undercook it, it's still rubbery, you know, still pliable. But if you get it just right, you can crumble it and use it like bacon bits. So then you can crumble it over baked potatoes and squash ravioli. This is sage. You can use these leaves, but they're littler. I just like the big ones, and the big Bear Garden is the main flagship. It's the strongest smelling one too. That's what I want. Is BERGGARTEN. I think it sounds like a German. Mm-hmm. Berg. Bergamot is something else. Okay. Bergamot is a bee balm. Or a Minerva, yes, that you can make teas with. That's a whole nother thing. BERG and then GARTEN. I think I'm spelling that right. I think it's a T, not a D. A garten, not a garden. I think. Okay. And this one I just brought for fun. This is another one that has got a misleading common name. But I love the smell of this. It's curry. And it smells like curry. And I did have a customer, and I thought, that's brilliant, who put that in vinegar, and then she would splash that on her stir fries or in her Indian cooking. It's not curry, because curry is a spice blend of, could be turmeric, It could be paprika. It could be, there's as many different combinations of curry as there is, I don't know, taco seasonings. But that just smells wonderful. So I just brought that along for fun. But that's definitely a strong smelling. If you're wondering what's strong smelling versus light smelling, that's definitely strong smelling. So does that kind of make sense? Yeah, go ahead. No, I'm saying in a curry blend, you will get turmeric in there, you'll get paprika, you know, in the blend, the spice blend, the different spices that are in a curry blend. But there's not one set. There's like, depends on what village in India you are from as to how you make. It's like paprikash here, right? The people in Illyria make the paprikash this way, and the people in Wilmington make them a much different way. Yes. All right, so now we're getting into having a little bit of fun in the kitchen. So you can learn from my mistakes. I, long time ago, looked in a herb magazine and it said make a sandwich with fresh thyme, of fresh thyme and something you were gonna grill and more fresh thyme and put it on the grill. So I did that. And the fresh thyme went right into the chicken. So I'm like, oh, first you take the chicken and sear it first. And then you put it on a fresh bed of thyme and maybe put some more just to finish it. And it just kind of infuses right in here. Speaking of infusing, here's one that I didn't add because I just realized this one for this time of year. I just made this up. I don't know. Again, other people are probably doing it already. But speaking of infusing, an easy way, I'm getting off track, is to, how many of you like butternut squash? They're real prevalent this time of year. I've got a ton of butternut squash, so doggone it, every night we're having butternut squash this time of year. And I cut it in half and I cleared it out, and I roast mine this way because it steams it. You could do it this way and add butter, but I do it this way. But I looked at it and I went, you know what, a garlic bulb would fit in there. So I took a garlic bulb, sliced off the top, oozed a little bit of olive oil, a little bit of salt, a little bit of pepper, put it in there, put the butternut squash right on top. I just think I destroyed my thing. And it just infused into the butternut. And it protected that garlic from high heat. Because I never bake garlic, you know, beyond 375. I just think it just kind of, it can burn it. And yeah, so anyways. What else? What are the things I do? So yes, if you're doing it on the grill, sear it first. And these are the grill herbs. Those are not the grill herbs over there. These are the grill herbs, the real hearty. Okay, good, I'm getting close. Another easy one, taking rosemary, and not all rosemary has this, but some rosemary gets real thick stems. Pull it off and use that as a skewer. Herb water, don't do sun tea. Don't need to do sun tea. So in the morning, collect a handful of pineapple sage, handful of lemon, little bit of mint, maybe a scented geranium just for fun. You could even put a rose in there if you wanted to, if it was organic. And put that in a pitcher of water, put that in the refrigerator. 6 or 8 hours later, it almost gets bubbly. It almost gets effervescent. And keep it in the refrigerator. My dad could drink that when at the end his thirst trigger wasn't working well, and he didn't like to drink water, but he would drink that because it softens the water. It makes it taste good, and it just, anyways, real easy. Adding pizza, for pizza, adding the pineapple sage flowers after you pull out a Hawaiian pizza, or basil flowers over a pepperoni. And there's the sage bacon bits. All right, the last thing I will say, because you can see other things there, is turmeric. Add turmeric to your diet any which way you can. Turmeric, it's good for inflammation. It's good for those achy muscles at this point. So if you can put a teaspoon onto your rice over your vegetables, you kind of get used to it. It's not a strong flavor, so turmeric. We actually grow turmeric, but it's much easier to go to the health food store and get turmeric because you don't get that much out of a plant. But the other thing is garlic. If you can, so here's the thing with garlic. It has alanase, which converts to allicin. Allicin is the powerhouse of garlic that lowers your blood pressure, that helps with diabetes, that helps with numerous things. But guess what? As soon as you heat it or add acid to it, it dies. It deactivates the allicin. Garlic is super, super good for you, but if you can, eat it raw. Here's something that's particularly not good tasting in the box. I do this, and I didn't do it this year. I missed it, so I got to get back on the. And I do that. Sometimes I'm good at this. Sometimes, but to honor my mother, I have a garlic cleanse every year. That has nothing to do with she didn't. She did have an inflamed liver. So yes, I am honoring my mother. But it's always around September 21st. That's your birthday. That's when I do this. And you literally take the garlic. You mince it up, or you just throw the thing into a food processor. You add as much lemon. If you can add more lemon juice than a quarter cup in relation, but it's hard. I mean, it's bad enough you're doing garlic and lemon, but quarter cup lemon, fresh squeezed, three-quarter cup orange juice. The tablespoon of olive oil helps with lubrication and to kind of keep it all together. And yeah, as many garlic cloves as you can put in there. It's disgusting. You whirl it up and you try to drink the whole cup. I wouldn't say it at one sitting because you might throw up. I mean, it's not that bad, but I mean, it's pretty powerful. And you clear your social calendar for the next 2 days. But I tell ya, I know it works because my skin gets younger. In other words, I start getting acne because the crap is coming out of my pores. I know it works. And then you can do, I have a tea here, a fenugreek, alfalfa, and peppermint tea. You can go to the health food store and get a tea cleanse, a liver cleanse, and that's what you, so that is your challenge. I'm telling you, it makes you feel better. It's disgusting, but it makes you feel better. Anyway, I better be quiet because the man told me if I speak more than 74 minutes, it will get cut off. I mean, like the tape will, not a body part, but it will get cut off. So if you have any questions, I am happy to stick around because you are free to go if you would like.